Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 83 of Nerd Pride Radio. 83, the age at which you're allowed a second bar mitzvah. Who knew, huh? Apparently the Torah tells you that the average lifespan, or the normal lifespan for a human being, is 70 years. So if you have your first bar mitzvah at 13, well, 70 years later, you're entitled to a second one. 83. Go figure. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's probably like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. Oh, my co-host this week, I don't have one. Ah, that's weird. I thought I would have written something down there. Oh, well. That means we get to the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast even sooner, because this is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And first up, not going to waste any time. First up, I guess I will waste a little bit of time. If you guys start hearing pounding, knocking, all sorts of noises, I may have to cut this short and come back later, because there's a trailer across the street from my house, and there's no workmen here, but the trailer's there. I think there's going to be some guys here to take my roof off, because apparently you get 3 months behind on your roof mortgage, and Wells Fargo does not fool around about it. So, now I've got insurance money came in, we're getting the roof replaced, siding redone, all sorts of stuff. So if the noise starts up, I apologize. I'll try not to let it affect the cast. And if I have to finish it up later tonight, we'll do that. But anyway, now we won't waste any more time as we get right to the science corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. All right, what we're going to learn today? Robot names. This is the greatest. I was putting together a new hero battle, which should be starting up soon. The people are gathering names. I'm thinking maybe by Monday or Tuesday I'll start this thing up. So if you still want to get in, there's time. I mean, come on, jump on over. But this current hero battle is going to be a robot battle. So everyone's got to nominate a robot that they want to put into the battle. And as I'm compiling the list of all the names people have submitted to me, I notice that they're all short names, except Optimus Prime, which is two short names put together. But in general, all the names are really short. Like, nothing over five or six letters. We're talking Ultron, Tweaky from the old Buck Rogers, Flexo, R2-D2, Data, Wall-E, even Johnny 5. You gotta cut that 5 off the end. But Johnny... nobody has nominated Rosie yet from the Jetsons, but she fits right into that pattern. All really short names for robots. All fictional robots here. And so I posed the question just wondering out loud in that thread. I said, wonder why that is. There's got to be a reason. And Lucy, bless her, said, hey, that would make a great topic for the podcast. So here I am. Now, you're asking yourself, Mike, how is this scientific? Well, I went and asked an expert, is what I did. You have heard me rave many times about how much I am obsessed with the Baby Name Wizard blog at babynamewizard.com. Seriously, if you haven't been over there, go check it out. Just read the blog. Go back through the back archives. We've got links to the best of stuff, and it's really cool stuff. I am just fascinated because it's numbers and statistics, but applied to baby names, and I find that fascinating. And so I sent a note over to Laura Wattenberg, who is the face of Baby Name Wizard, and I asked her. I said, "Hey, you know, we're putting together this game. I noticed that robots all tend to have really short names. There's some exceptions, but for the most part, they all have these really short names. And the best I can come up with is what they're trying to make them friendly. I don't know." And she was wonderful. Sent me a response back that I don't know. I was going to read the whole thing, but it's too much. Let me sum up. Although I'll ramble on forever. Her initial thought backs me up that yes, it's to make them friendlier because robots are just not an inherently friendly or cuddly thing in general because, you know, they're machines. It's, you know, beings made of metal and they are alien to us. And so therefore, according to Laura, to make them friendlier and more relatable, you give them cutesy names, short nickname style names. Or, she said alternately, a lot of times in fiction, robots are named by their, you know, numbers and letters, you know, as if it's some sort of model number or call number or whatever it is. And therefore, if you're going to name something in just numbers and letters that don't spell out an actual word, well, then those are intended to be pronounced individually, R2-D2, C-3PO, for example. And she said, so therefore, you can't do a really long one because you know, once you get up to 8 characters and you have to, you know, pronounce each letter individually, it's way too long to be manageable. So either they're going to go numbers and letters, which is going to keep it super short. I hadn't thought of that. Or they want to make what she calls huggable names. All right, and then this is where she started to get all scientific on me, because apparently she's done articles on huggable names in the past, and she compiles numbers. For example, the first article that she linked me to was comparing names given to kids in children's storybooks for young children, and they all tend to be short, huggable, as she calls them, nickname-y type names. So, you know, you get a Sam, a Max, a Billy, stuff like this. And she took those names that all had these same characteristics of being short, quite typically nicknames of slightly old-fashioned names. All right, that most of these were a little bit old-fashioned. And she said that compared favorably to the names that people give their pets over the last 10 years. Because apparently she has access to a database of that information as well. And she had compiled top 10 pet names. And the names on the children's storybook characters and the names on the pet name list, you wouldn't have, at a guess, been able to tell which list was which. And there was so much overlap that I think 4 of the names were identical. But they all sounded the same. And now, as I lay my list of robot names that I gave as examples, and she had a whole bunch more because she clearly does this professionally, the list of robot names is really pretty similar. I mean, obviously, if you take out the ones that are just numbers and letters, take out R2-D2, for example. But most of these others follow that same pattern. You know, Wally, Rosie. There's a lot of similarity in that kind of stuff, and I was just fascinated. And okay, and I could ramble on about this forever, but I feel like I'm going to keep repeating myself. I just thought it was so cool. So again, to sum up, when you're naming a robot, either you want to highlight the fact that it is a robot, and thus you give it the numbers and letters names. C-3PO, Ed-209 was another example she threw out. G-4225, which was, she then admitted, the name of her new dishwasher. Which is an actual, I assumed, a dishwashing machine, although it could have been an android that she bought specifically to wash her dishes. I don't know. And so if you come up with those names that are intended to highlight a robot's non-humanity, its machine nature, well, it's got to be short, because otherwise the long example she gave, PMW-300K1, is just not memorable and not easily wieldable. in a story or conversation. And that one, by the way, was her Sony camcorder. So you keep them short for that reason. Or if you want to go the exact opposite way and just make them more lovable and friendly and relatable, then you'll go with the short, huggable, you know, children's storybook kid names, the pet names, the you know, even the new one, like Chappie was the other one that I just thought of. Chappie, which is 7 letters, so it's slightly longer than the rest, but still, good short name, Chappie, even though it's not even a traditional name, at least not in any of my circles. Chappie still has that same ring, you know, being derived from Chappie. It sounds old-fashioned, and yet with the long E ending gives you that that cutesy sort of sound to it. So very cool. And one last thing before I close out this topic. I want to note that when I sent the query to her, my phrasing was, hey, look, I know robot names aren't necessarily your specialty, but here's the question. In her response, she says, no, it's a great question, and don't worry, you know, robot, non-robot, we tackle all kinds of names, and this is from her, she says, we tackle all kinds of names from Alucard to Zaphod, which means, look, there are plenty of A names that you could pick and plenty of Z names you can pick, and, I mean, is that just randomly what came to her head, or is she so good at this name thing that she recognizes, I mean, you know, clearly, I'm Nerd Pride Radio. This is my Nerd Pride podcast. I have nerd on my business cards. Did she pick Alucard and Zaphod specifically to target me? Because if so, that worked. That was really good. So anyway, thank you to Laura for the information. And those are my robot names. I got no good way to close out segments, and I have no way to do any sort of segue or transition. So, you know, I just stop. Hey, you know who likes podcasts? Pod people. I should listen to the podcast. Pod people, you'll never close your ears again. I love that song. I love that song. It's so nostalgic for me. Anyway, this is going to be a short segment. Thrilling Adventure Hour. I have finally caught up to Thrilling Adventure Hour. I caught up all the way up through 200 episodes of this podcast, and I still love every moment of it. It is absolutely wonderful. And what happens in the last episode that I listened to? Now that I'm caught up and I'm ready to start downloading them week by week as it's time to go, the very last one I listened to, they mention casually that, well, you know, since we're not going to have that many more episodes, yeah, well, since it's closing down, since we're going to... What? You're done? What? I don't... What? I just found this out this morning, so I'm still in shock, a little heartbroken, and I don't have a whole lot more information than that, other than I realized that, okay, they're all talking about it like this is a known thing, and yet here I am completely baffled why, and then I realized, oh, the convention panels. They'd been throwing in episodes of, because apparently they were doing the convention circuit, and so the cast would go around and do the convention circuit, and then they would release podcasts that were just the question and answer session from the conventions. And after about the fourth one of those, I realized that, look, no fault of their own, convention goers tend to ask the same set of questions every time, and they're giving the same stock answers. And I mean, it's all very, you know, exciting and well and good, but I've heard the stories before, so I don't need to listen again. And so the last two or three convention episodes, I just deleted them and didn't bother to listen to them because I was ready to skip ahead to the stories. And so I went back to I went to Wikipedia and I looked up Thrilling Adventure Hour to find out, okay, what they're closing? Is that for real? When's that going to happen? Is what? And it says, yeah, they announced it at Gen Con 2014. Oh, God. Okay. So let me go back. Let me listen to the Gen Con one. Sure enough. Or no, it wasn't Gen Con because it had to be Comic-Con. I've got Gen Con on the brain for other reasons. Had to be Comic-Con. But anyway, it was later in the year. And so I go back and I listen to that one, and sure enough, one of the first things they do is announce that, well, we're going to be recording our last live episode on April, whatever it is. So, like, within 2 weeks. I finally get caught up, and 2 weeks from now they're going to record their last episode. And it sounds like they've got some under their belt, so I'll keep getting new podcasts for a little while, and then they're done. I'm so sad. And so, look, I know they did the comic books and
I think they're still working on those. I know that there's supposed to be a live action feature, whether it's a concert recording or I don't know what it's going to be for sure. And in the convention panel, they were talking about how, okay, we're going to move on to other things. No, these characters aren't dying. We are just, this is our chance to take these characters in a new direction to show them on a new platform. And so I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if this is going to be, you know, translating it into various animated series. I don't know if they're going to be doing a live video cast of the stuff. I don't know if they're going to be doing more of the comic book or the feed, but it's, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with it. I haven't gotten that far. Like I say, I just found out. I haven't even finished listening to that episode that explains it. So maybe the last 15 minutes of that give me more information. I don't know yet. But I'm seriously, I'm crushed. I'm heartbroken. I get, they're going to keep going. There's going to be other stuff. I will be able to consume Thrilling Adventure Hour in other forms, but, oh, it's like, God, just when I finally got there, I finally got caught up. But if you haven't listened to Thrilling Adventure Hour, why are you not listening to me? Go listen to it because it is brilliant. It's brilliant and funny and wonderful. You absolutely have to. My kids and I listen to it together, and it's great. So go listen to Thrilling Adventure Hour, and when they start doing some more cool stuff, obviously, I'll know about it, and I'll probably share it with you because it's the kind of guy I am. But do you know what it is time for now? A nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are so, so close. Actually, first thing in the nerd culture report is talking about robot names, and I mentioned R2-D2 in passing, and one of my kids says, so, Dad, why can't R2-D2 talk? Well, okay, I'm ready for this. Well, he does. He just talks and beeps and whistles and clicks and stuff, but you know, for whatever stupid reason, everybody who knows him and hears those apparently understands exactly what he's saying, and he certainly understands English, and so therefore it all works out. But, you know, if he needed to, you know, C-3PO is a translator bot, so it's a... Wait a minute. Why can't R2-D2 talk? No, seriously, why can't R2-D2 talk? And ultimately, the conclusion I came up with is because, well, you know what, they had to put in all of his computer interface stuff so that he could hack into machines. They had to put in all the little arms and compartments and the video camera and the projector and all the other stuff. And once they were done, there was no space left for the fingernail-sized chip that would have been required for a voice synthesizer. That's why he can't talk. Yeah, because bad design, that's why. Because it's stupid. That's why. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, really? R2-D2 can't talk? That makes no sense. I mean, okay, maybe in 1977, it seemed like a reasonable thing that we would actually need to have a translator protocol droid who could translate 400 and some languages because, or 4,000. How many can C-3PO speak? I don't remember. That somehow having a translator droid, and I know he's a protocol droid, but a translator droid somehow made sense because it never occurred to us that, you know, you just wear a little box that translates everything all the time. Maybe in 1977 it made sense somehow that you would have a robot that didn't have a voice synthesizer, that somehow we thought voice synthesizers would be so complicated that maybe a robot as small as R2 just couldn't fit one in there. Maybe that's, I don't know. That's the only thing I can come up with. Or Lucas just thought it was really, really cool and never put a whole lot of thought into it because, well, but that's cool. Which is probably the truth. But still kind of disappointing that now, you know, what is this, 35 years later? And there's still no good explanation of why R2-D2 can't talk. I mean, it makes no sense anymore. So anyway, but that's not why I came to the Nerd Culture Report. The real reason I came in here was to talk about zombies. Why zombies? Because we were talking about copyright and the idea that, this was one of my kids was asking me why there's so many zombie movies out there and geez, are we ever going to get tired of them? And the answer is no, we're probably not going to get tired of them as soon as you think. You'd think we'd be overloaded with them at this point. But the real magic of zombies is that they're not copyrighted, and therefore anybody can take zombies and do whatever they want with them. You can, the whole mythos of zombies, as created by Romero, is completely open source, and anyone can just steal it, play with it, adapt it, do whatever they want with it without having to provide money or credit back to anybody. It's just zombies. And, okay, how'd that come about? That's a quick story. Prior to Night of the Living Dead, zombies were pretty much only voodoo zombies. That was the classic version of the zombie, the voodoo-created zombie slave, which was usually a mind-controlled person who, I believe you had to die first or go through some form of death, but then you were a mind-controlled slave. And that was the classic voodoo zombie as exemplified by the 1932 film White Zombie. That the band then takes its name from. And when Romero came around, Romero was the one with his partner, but Romero primarily, came up with the story and this idea of zombies as this infectious, brain-eating creature, this mindless, undead thing that feeds on brains and spreads its zombieism. And the whole, that he came up with everything. Everything you know about zombies came from that movie. That's the basis of everything. And then they had the movie already, and then they changed the title at the last minute to be Night of the Living Dead. And when they changed the title and they made up the new title card for the front end of the movie, they forgot to put a copyright notice on it. And in 1968, if you just failed to put the copyright notice on it, then that meant that you had no claim to your materials, and the minute you published it, it was free for everybody to use. And so that's what happened. And then 1970, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, that changed, and now we don't have to put up with something that stupid. That, look, clearly I created it, clearly I own this, but that was not the case in 1968. And so by forgetting to put on the copyright notice and then distributing it, they gave it to the public for free. And so here's why that's important. Look what happened. Look what happened to zombies as a result of that mistake. By making it public domain, by making it an open source material, he created this mythos that anybody could share in and anybody could be a part of. And it's turned into this huge magical thing, this thing that everybody knows of, everybody shares in. I've created my own zombie stuff for various role-playing games and stories and other stuff that I've done. We all have. We've all played with zombies. We've all enjoyed zombie movies and zombie TV shows and zombie books, and we're all there. And so it makes me wonder how the world would be different. I mean, obviously, the world is still the world, but how what would have happened to zombies if they had remembered to put the copyright notice on? Just think about it. If suddenly they what the heck was that? Did something just glitch? I just heard a weird pop. Anyway, if they had remembered to put that copyright notice on it, then Romero and his partner, their company, would have owned the zombies, and no one else would have been able to do it, and they wouldn't have had this big fight where Romero went off and made his brand of zombies and his partner went off and made his brand of zombies. They would have owned all of it, and nobody else could make zombie movies that used zombies in that way. You couldn't have done the classic Romero zombies, the slow zombies, the lumbering, lurching, brain-eating zombies would not have been a thing that anyone else could play with. They would have existed solely in those movies, and anyone else who wanted to use that would have had to get it from him. And that doesn't happen. You know, it's not like DC is giving up Superman for people to freely use around, right? It's not like Disney gives up their characters. No, they protect those with their lives. Something turns out to be popular, they protect it for all it's worth, and everything about that subject comes out of one company, one sole source for the truth of whatever that thing is. So, had they remembered to change that title card correctly, had they remembered to put a copyright notice on it, we wouldn't have them. I mean, they would be some cult classic movie that probably everyone would know and everyone would love, but would we have Zombieland? Would we have The Walking Dead? Would we have any of a thousand zombie things that I have enjoyed and sometimes despised, but would we have any of them? No, none of that would have come around because one company would own it. And so I started thinking, all right, well, what does that mean for us? I mean, you know, because does that mean that there's some value in not copywriting certain things? I mean, because, you know, in the end, what did it cost Romero? Well, it turns out not much, because the fact that you could have all this these knockoffs, it created so much interest and fervor around it that, well, he then created all the sequels that he ran that were the good sequels, not the silly sequels. He did all the serious ones, the Of the Dead series. So, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, etc., etc. And those are still all considered brilliant, and he still owns copyright on all of those movies, and he made tons of money off of that. His partner went with the sillier Living Dead series, and Return of the Living Dead, Return of the Living Dead 2, and all those, and he made a fortune off of them. Everybody came out winning really big on this, even though they lost money on the initial production. In fact, they made nothing on the initial production, and yet because of what it was, they were able to capitalize on it later. And so, I don't know, part of me says, okay, it does show the magic of what happens when certain things get into the public domain and what can happen, the way the creativity can come together and you can create something bigger than the original, something really amazing and wonderful. And I know some of you think zombies are hack and getting a little passe, but it's still, look at the movement, look at what's become of them over decades, and it's unbelievable. Right? Okay. But then also part of me says, yeah, but not everything is zombies. I mean, this was a movie monster that we hadn't seen in this way before. It was something brand new, and it came complete with a creepy, scary, totally understandable mythos encapsulated in a movie that captured the imagination because it was a great movie on top of everything else. It's not just a good idea, but it was a great movie. And it captured the imagination, and then with that fire underneath it, then it becomes public domain. Is that just lightning in a bottle? Is that just, because I'm certainly not speaking to the idea that we should all give away our ideas for free, and that there shouldn't be copyright, and that people shouldn't be allowed to profit exclusively off their own materials. Because that's the problem with, while this worked for Romero in that he could then make the sequels, and then he could then create an empire on that popularity that worked for him. The unfortunate part is that he never could make a dime off that first movie because he didn't own it. I mean, once it becomes public domain, anyone's allowed to just download it and distribute it for free. Although in 1968, they weren't doing much downloading, but you know what I mean. Anyone could just take copies of it and distribute it for free. There was no reason anyone had to send money back to Romero. So I certainly don't want to imply that we should just be able to steal other people's stuff and not give them due credit and cash in exchange for their creations. But maybe it lends some credence to the model of, hey, you know what? Especially when you're just starting out, maybe you give some of it away for free. Maybe you give them a taste. Maybe you if you've got a good idea, maybe you give them that hook for free. And then you start creating the stuff that you can profit off of. I mean, look, how many times have I gone on about Wizards of the Coast and the open gaming license for D&D 3 and 3.5? Dungeons & Dragons was floundering until Dungeons & Dragons 3 came out, and that open gaming license blew the market up. They just gave away the rules and said anyone can take these, rewrite them, distribute them for free, adapt them. As long as you keep it free and just keep passing it forward, go for it. And it revitalized not just Dungeons & Dragons, not just Wizards of the Coast, but the entire role-playing game industry got a shot in the arm that needed. And my thoughts are not completely fully formed on this. I know this issue is so huge and so complex that I cannot possibly be hitting all the nuances of it. But it's food for thought. And there's something to be said moving forward into our internet age where law still says that I get to own my stuff for 70 years beyond my death, and even beyond that, if my heirs and whatnot are really clever about how they handle it, that you can hold on to a copyright forever, right, and not ever have to give up a dime of that thing. There's a balance between that and just giving away things for free, because we've got laws that say you can hold on to everything forever, and yet we've got an internet that says that, well, sure, you say that, and yet we can steal things pretty much with the click of a mouse for free and with almost no risk of getting caught. Where's our balance? So somewhere between those two extremes, both of which exist right now, the legal side and then the reality of the ease of the internet, somewhere in between those, I think maybe Night of the Living Dead has a lesson for us in that. And I don't know what it is yet, but there's something there. So anyway, that's my nerd culture report. Oh my goodness, are we really at a half hour? You know what? I don't care. Let's go straight to Roku! Oh, I just can't tell you how much I love watching television, because there's so much good TV out there and there's no time to watch it. I just got the newest disc of Game of Thrones. We are getting towards the end of season 2 of Breaking Bad. I have not yet started on the next season of Orphan Black, and it is killing me. Sherlock, God, would you please give me some more Sherlock? I can't. Oh, British television. I love British television. Sherlock. The idea that they're coming up with seasons, or series as they call them, but a season of a show is only 3 episodes long, but each episode is the equivalent of a high-quality movie? Awesome. I love this. And the only reason I'm dipping into Roku right now is to tell you that I told you I watched the first episode of Black Mirror. Well, now I've watched episodes 2 and 3 of Black Mirror, and episode 3 especially, I was blown away. It was so incredibly well done. The premise of episode 3 of Black Mirror, it's the finale of their first season, third episode. And the premise is, imagine now, we've gone beyond the stage that we're at now where everyone has a smartphone and everyone is constantly recording things all the time. Okay, imagine now that it's the chip implanted in your head that actually honestly records everything all the time. Okay, that's your premise. Now, what happens in the lives of typical people as a result of that? And it's brilliant. It is so brilliantly done. It's a great story. And it was uncomfortable to the point that I was ready to turn it off, because it was so uncomfortable to watch. And yet, the payoff, I'm so glad I stuck around. I mean, there was no way I could have shut it off, but I felt like it. I really wanted to. I kept cringing. It's one of those things that there's every now and then something happens on a movie or a show that is so uncomfortable that I just don't want to watch. And it's usually not gore and horror, although every once in a while a movie can go so far over the edge into gore and horror. Audition is one of those. Grace is one of those. It can go so far over the edge that I don't want to look at the screen anymore. I can't turn away, but I don't want to look at the screen. That happens. But this was one of those where it's just the characters are doing things that are so wrong. So it's like you just want to grab them and shake them and go, stop that. Stop what you're doing. I can't look. It's painful. It brings up every stupid thing you've ever done and the horror and embarrassment of it's just wrong. And so episode 3 of Black Mirror captures that and then pays it off, and it was brilliant. So if that incoherent review isn't enough to make you watch the show, then nothing will. Just, you guys should go watch it. I'm telling you, so much good TV and so little time. Oh, I love living in the golden age of television. And you know what? In fact, we already had a golden age of television. This is the renaissance of television. This is the era where television becomes not just relevant, but it becomes equivalent to film. It becomes to the point where the greatest minds in show business, the greatest directors and the greatest actors and the greatest people involved, are all writers. I don't want to leave anybody out. The greatest gaffers. I don't know. Quit pestering me. I don't want to be all inclusive right now. I want to just get on. That the best people in the business are all coming together to make awesome, awesome television. They also make awesome, awesome movies, but it's no longer limited. And I think the internet And the freedom that we have is only going to make that even more so as time goes on. I hope. Fingers crossed. So anyway, enough about that. Is there anything else I've got for this? No. No, there's nothing left in the meticulous supplied portion of the podcast, which can only mean it's time for the Pod-O-Matic! Holy Frankenstein, it's alive, Batman! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, they come from Mrs. Darks, and they come from Billy Bob, and they come from Stan, and they come from the other people who all sent me Pod-O-Matics this week because I sent out my desperate plea for more Pod-O-Matic entries. Or money. You could have sent money too, but I would much rather have the Pod-O-Matics. So, see, that is where you guys come in. All right, just like them. If you want to hear me haver on about something, you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. I got about 30 new ones this week, so that puts us at least back into the black on this one. We've got over our 100, and we're good for a couple of weeks, but hey, I hate to sound desperate, but I'm desperate. Send me more, guys. I appreciate everything you're doing. Please keep it up. Pod-O-Matic is some of my favorite stuff all week. It's one of my favorite parts of the show because I don't have to do any work. I let R2 roll. I look at the questions that you guys wrote for me, and then I just ramble until I feel like rolling again. It's the easiest thing in the world. First number, 69, dude, which, by the way, is on streaming, and I've got to get my kids to watch it. My kids have not seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure yet, so I've got to get on that. Speaking of Stan is the first question. It says, you've become famous and notorious for writing a tell-all book. What was the book about? All right, here's the problem with this question, Stan. I've become famous, notorious for my tell-all book. Well, my tell-all book would be, you know, something like, sleeping my way up the chain of command at some gaming company, or you know, there's just none of us that are famous enough to warrant me being notorious for doing something like that. Or, you know, I was even thinking that, okay, maybe it's something about having. Cavorted with various famous podcasters, and I realized that, oh, wait, there are no famous podcasters. There's, you know, three of them that maybe have some name recognition for the fact that they are podcasters, but even that name recognition is pretty small. I mean, you say Adam Carolla? Adam Carolla's recognizable, but most of the country would go, at who? What? And then you'll list something he's done, or you'll show them a picture or let them hear his voice, and they'll go, oh, yeah, that guy. I get, you know, just the circles I travel in just don't contain enough famous people for me to write a tell-all memoir about. So therefore, my tell-all memoir would actually have to be completely fictional. Well, obviously, it's already completely fictional. You know what? In fact, I might even write it. It is... it would be a tell-all memoir from the perspective of someone who can travel to alternate worlds or through alternate worlds, and the journey that they've made to the various alternate versions of history, and specifically alternate versions of famous people, and thus the horrible things, or sometimes wonderful things, that they are up to in alternate universes. And when you write your tell-all book here in our world, it leads people to wonder, really, well, if they're willing to do that in Earth X09, is our version here willing to do the same? Do they have the same tendencies, the same potential? Is that would probably be where it comes from. So I've written up stories, true stories of alternate celebrities, and then leaving people to wonder, really, well then maybe our world isn't as normal as we thought it was, which we didn't even think it was that normal to start with. Or alternately, my tell-all memoir will be the raunchy and wild exploits of Benjamin Franklin as related to me on his deathbed. And they are amazing. And that's not my original idea. That came from my brother Kyle. And it's a brilliant idea, by the way. I've actually written a chapter of that, and it's hysterical. But... okay, not a whole chapter. I wrote half of a chapter of that. But it's still hysterical. So that might be it. It wouldn't actually be my own memoirs, but I would certainly be willing to relate the stories of Benjamin Franklin as he told them to me himself on his deathbed. So I could do that. 61. 61 is from Mr. Ronster. And Ron says, are you a fan of Hawaiian shirts? Nope. Nope, I don't like them at all. I've never worn one that I can remember. Not a fan. Although, my dad did have, and it wasn't truly Hawaiian, but it was it had a Hawaii print on it. It was a Hawaiian style pattern, but not a true Hawaiian shirt, but it was a formal shirt. It was a tux shirt, but the collar and cuffs were done in this Hawaiian print, and it was really cool. So, I mean, it is a formal tux shirt, and yet, when he puts it on, he's got collar and cuffs in Hawaiian flashy, garish colors, and it was really, really cool. I liked that a lot. But me personally, nah, no thank you. 44. Who do you think it is? I am going to guess that it's Zimney, but let's look. 44. No, it's Ronster again. Do you go caroling or sing as a family at all? No, not really. I've been caroling. One of my fondest memories was caroling in the state of Alabama. In Montgomery, Alabama, we went caroling when I was a kid. And it was actually in Prattville, Alabama, but still close enough. It's right next door to Montgomery. It might as well be the same place. And when we went caroling, my dad taught me to sing the Deck Us All with Boston Charlie version of the Christmas Carol, the song from Pogo Possum, Walt Kelly's comic from decades and decades ago when he was a kid. And the Deck Us All with Boston Charlie version of Deck the Halls was, to me, the funniest thing in the world when I was a kid. And I absolutely loved it. And, oh, my God, you know what I did? Oh, I'm sorry. I just realized I completely forgot to go out and put up my listener betrayal thread. Why am I so bad at that anymore? It was right there at the top of the page. Why didn't I do it? I am so bad. Hold on. I'm going to go do that really quick. And go episode 83 recording. All right. There we go. I'm sorry, and I'm going to sit here and type and not talk while I post this up. How's that? Helpful? All right, we're good. Back to where we're at. 44 again. You're not even trying, R2. All right, 97. That's way better. One of the series. 97. Damn, Ron. Ronster's got the next one. Now that you've been on Twitter for a while, which person, celebrity, etc., would thrill you to the bones if they followed you on Twitter? Any celebrity at all. Any celebrity. Look, obviously, Kumail Nanjiani is my first choice. As much as I love Kumail and I would love to be followed by Kumail, I would probably get a bigger thrill out of Nathan Fillion simply because he's much more impressive. And not to say, sorry, if you're listening, Kumail, and I'm sure you are, not to say that you're not as impressive as Nathan Fillion. You are. I meant, if I go tell the story to somebody else, I go, oh my God, you'll never believe who's following me on Twitter. It's Nathan Fillion. People go ape over that crap. If I say, Kumail Nanjiani, I have several people I know who would be thrilled to death for me, and then most of the rest of them go, who? Sorry, Kumail. I don't mean to offend, but, you know, that's just how it goes. But, yeah, probably Nathan Fillion would be the biggest get right now. Although, you know, I wouldn't mind Will Wheaton or Felicia Day. Any of those. I don't know. But anyone in the nerd circles that I follow, I would be thrilled to death if any of them decided to follow me back. That would be really, really cool. With the implication that, look, if you're going to follow me on Twitter, I just assume that you're listening to my podcast, right? Obviously, they would be. 24. Hey, there's Zimney. I knew he'd come around. What is your favorite nerd animal? My youngest son has a shirt. It used to be his brother's, but it's his now. My youngest son, Noah, has a shirt that he got from Woot. Shirt.woot.com. Good stuff. And anyway, the shirt he got from Woot has a nerd dinosaur on the front. And it's a really cool looking nerd dinosaur on a black t-shirt. And I don't know if it has an official name, but we have always referred to him as Nerdosaurus Rex. And we all love that shirt. So that would probably be my favorite. Although I also have a little bit of fondness for Hip-Hop-Opotamus, because he tries so hard, but clearly he's not a b-boy. He doesn't have sick moves. He's not really good at what he does, and yet he thinks he is. He's so hard, wants to be really cool, and he's just not. So again, for the sympathy factor, a lot of fondness for Hip-Hop-Opotamus, but Nerdosaurus Rex would have to be my favorite nerd animal. 0-1. We are at the very top of the list from my brother Kyle. Kyle says, "Who is your favorite magician?" I like magicians in general. In fact, just heard an interview with James Randi, the amazing Randi, on The Nerdist, and dude is 86 years old and still going strong. Just had released a documentary about himself, his life. Really, really cool guy. And but he's not my favorite. When I was younger, I would have told you the amazing Jonathan, who I've also just heard recent interviews. I think his was on the Marin podcast. But amazing Jonathan was really funny when I was a kid. I loved Jonathan because he was a real magician who did real tricks, but also intentionally screwed them up for comedy's sake, and was an even better comedian than he was a magician. He was just funny. He was a great act. But my favorite magician right now has got to be Penn and Teller. And if you're saying, since you're asking magician singular and I have to pick just one, then okay, I'll say Penn Jillette. But Penn and Teller, I've always appreciated their act. I've bought their books, read their books, I've watched their TV show, or TV shows at this point, caught their act in many places. I adore the Three of Clubs. Whenever I have a magic trick where I have to force a card, I like to use the Three of Clubs in honor of them, or at least as I relate the joke to people, I always use the, or joke, whatever their act was, their joke, whatever trick I'm explaining of my own, I always use Three of Clubs as the example, just because every card's the Three of Clubs. That's just how it works. So, Penn and Teller. 14. 14 is from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, DM Darks, I'm guessing that's her husband, DM Darks likes to prey upon my and others' gullibility by answering questions with lies that sound totally legitimate. What is the most gullible moment you've ever had? Oh, I'm sorry, I know what it is, and I don't want to tell it. I don't know. I'm an idiot. I will tell you that your husband is not alone, because that is a great game. That is a great game, and I do it all the time. My wife is even better at it than I am. That's what you have kids for, is so that you can just tell them flat-out lies and watch them believe you. It's awesome. My son, Jacob, did I tell you guys this already about his name? That he literally, at some point, it was when he was little and Toy Story had come out, and it's, you know, he was all about Buzz and Woody. He loved the action figures, loved the toys, loved the movie. And later on, he commented about what a dumb name Woody was. Who would name their kid Woody? And my wife, totally deadpan, just said, "Well, we almost named you Woody. That was our second choice for you. That we were going to name you Woodrow." "You what?" Okay. Fast forward 12 years, and somehow it comes up, and he's like, "Wait a minute. You guys weren't really going to name me Woody, were you?" "What?" My wife doesn't even remember telling this story. So he relates the story to us, and we laughed our asses off because, oh my God, she told him that one, and he believed it for a dozen years before he finally figured out that, oh, they were just lying to me. They were yanking my chain. I should have known. Oh, we do this all the time. Whenever I pull it, they always go, yeah, thanks, Calvin's dad. Because if you've ever read Calvin and Hobbes, Calvin's dad was really good at that game, too. I will do that all the time. Eli is the one who falls for it the absolute worst. Every single time. It doesn't matter what my lie is. He goes, really? And I have to go, no, of course not. What, did you even think about it for a minute? No, of course it's not for real. But he at least is smart enough to ask me, really? Jacob just walked away and just bought it. So anyway, I'll tell you my moment. Okay, I just paused it. Not that you noticed, but I just paused it so I could answer the phone. Why is it that when I answer the phone on the air, it's always stupid and no fun? And then when I pause it to go answer the phone, that's when you guys should have been listening in. You could have heard. Let me replay it for you, all right? Hello, Mr. Jones. I'm calling from whatever foundation for cures for horrible diseases. And no, we're not raising money, but we do need your help. Okay, that's what he says. And I'm paraphrasing, I hope. And my response is, wow, that is awesome. But I'm recording a podcast right now, and I am not interested in the least. So better luck on your next call. Click. That's how I do it. I'm firm, but polite. I don't listen to them, and then I hang up. That's what I do. And you know, because they're just doing a job. He's getting paid to make these calls. There's no reason that I need to go piss him off or be rude to him. But on the other hand, there's a balance that if you give him a certain amount of politeness, it requires actually listening to their spiel. And I don't want to take that time. And in fact, if they know what's good for them, they don't want to take that time either. If I know it's a no sale, most of them are getting paid, or at least get bonuses based on their success rate. And therefore, why does he want to waste time with me if I'm a no sale? So why don't I just tell him straight up front, but very politely, but straight up front without any hesitation, hey, barking up the wrong tree, gotta go, better luck on your next call, bye, click. That's it. And then that way, he's on to making money, and I'm free to come back to you guys and tell this story. And so hopefully I don't make them angry. I did that once to a gal who, is it rude to call them gals? I have no idea. I've asked you that question before and you never give me an answer. But she calls me up and it was on my work line because she was selling tech stuff to IT managers, which I am not, but she thought so. And I did my very polite, yeah, you know what? I don't have the authority to do any of that. You're barking up the wrong tree, but better luck on your next call. Sincerely, bye. Click. All right. And then she called me back. She called me back super angry. That, how dare you hang up on me? You don't even know what I'm selling. You don't even know what I'm talking about. How can you possibly make a decision based on... Oh, wow, it was weird. To which I then said, because I'm not an IT manager, I don't make purchasing decisions and have no influence over them, and so therefore I'm not interested in you wasting my time. Goodbye, click. She didn't call back after that, but man, she was so angry. So angry. I'm like, I'm saving you time. I try and be nice. Oh well. Anyway, that's irrelevant. Should I roll again? Or should I actually fess up that I remember what the question was and come back and tell you what my most embarrassing, most gullible moment of embarrassment was? And it was when I was young, and my brother, God darn it. Oh, man. I can't even tell the story. It's not even that bad. I was a kid. I was, what, 15? Because we were in the big house. We were on the third floor up in New York. So I was maybe 15 or 16. And my brother Kyle tells me how in ancient Greece, in order to emulate the god Mercury, which Mercury is Roman, I get that. Okay, Hermes, that's fine. In order to emulate the god Mercury, I'm pretty sure he said Mercury. See, there, you were the ignorant one, not me, jerk. young men in ancient Greece or Rome, maybe he said Rome, damn. In order to emulate the god of speed, to make themselves faster, they would tear the wings off of doves and glue them to their feet To which I said, oh my God, seriously? Why would you even do that? That's a, oh my God. And then he laughs at me and calls me a rube. And oh my God, I can't believe you're such an idiot that you even considered that that might be real. And of course, I was a rube. Absolutely. Okay, no, wait. No, that's not the worst one. Damn it. Why? Yeah, I just gotta keep my mouth shut. That was a pretty good one. Kyle, when you're listening to this in February of 2016, and you finally get around to this episode, yeah, you can have yourself a good laugh at that. Okay. Because the next one happened when I was older, when I was in college. God darn it. And I've told you the story before, so I don't even know why I'm embarrassed to tell it again. But I was in college, you know, 20 years old, and I was not nearly so savvy and streetwise as I am now, and certainly not as well versed on critical thinking and conspiracy theories and understanding certain aspects of logic and stuff. And I wound up late night on some, I think it was even on the History Channel, but on some channel, very, very late at night, 1 a.m. And I watched a special on Is Elvis Still Alive? And it's one of those where they, you know, like Ancient Aliens or like any of these, you know, like the fake moon landing or any of these other conspiracy theory stories, they do a full documentary with the selectively chosen information and the twisting of stuff. And by the time I got done watching it, absolutely uncritically, I'm done watching it going, wow, Elvis might really still be alive. Holy crap. And so the mistake I made was then telling my brother that, oh my God, I saw the coolest show last night. Look, it's probably full of crap, but you know, there's a chance that Elvis might still be alive. I mean, yeah, I know it's probably not true, but God, it really could be. And again, he laughed at me and called me a rube and made fun of me relentlessly for ages after that because I am an idiot. Within the last 5 years, I've had occasion where I'm sitting with him. He goes, hey, remember the time you thought Elvis was still alive? Shut up. God. All right. I know better now. Damn it. All right. And done with those questions. 56. Okay. 56. Oh, man. What's taking me so long? There it is. Hey, Ronster. All right. How do you like your coffee, if at all? I like my coffee black. Period. That's it. All right. If you want to ruin your coffee with cream and sugar or flavors or whatever else you're going to do, you know what? Go drink something else. Seriously. There's no reason to drink coffee anything other than black. That is it. All right. I have said it once. I'll say it a million times. If you like your coffee full of sugary crap, then I'm telling you, drink black coffee for 1 week. You won't ever need anything in it after that. 1 week and it's like, no, this is what coffee is supposed to taste like. You'll be done. It's awesome. All right. And again, coffee with no crap in it has 2 or 3 calories per cup. It is a perfect diet drink / caffeine delivery system. What, no calories and all the caffeine. What else do I want? It's perfect. 92 is from Humongous. Hey, Humongous. All right, I didn't know you had any left on the list. Humongous, seriously, I know you haven't been coming around the boards, but I got to assume you're still listening. Send me some Podomatics, man. You're about to drop out here. We need you. All right. Humongous, what superhero movie would you like to see made? I've already mentioned this one. Captain Marvel, which is on the list. Captain Marvel's ready. I want to see... And Alpha Flight. Captain Marvel's going to get made, and it's probably going to get made right. It's going to be awesome. I'm thrilled with that. I want Alpha Flight. I want Alpha Flight really bad. And my last time I answered this question, I said Captain Marvel, but no. Give me Alpha Flight. Canadian superheroes? Alpha Flight has always been my favorite. Always will be my favorite. I love them. And in fact, when we were out of college, first married, I had found Alpha Flight number 1 of the new Alpha Flight series. My brother and I were both collecting comics off and on at the time. and we were both collecting Alpha Flight, but we had both picked up, you know, several issues in, and we were trying to collect the back issues, and I managed to find Alpha Flight number one of the new series, and he never could. And it was just by a random fluke that I ran into an issue of it. And this was, pre-internet, early days of the internet, so it wasn't, it wasn't as simple back then to just go online and go locate a comic and be done with it. You actually had to work at it. And for his birthday, I think, maybe it was either his birthday or it was, graduating from law school, or I can't remember, some special occasion for him, and I gave him Alpha Flight number one, my copy of it, my only copy of it, I gave it to him as a gift, and it was very, very touching and sweet, in spite of the fact that he made fun of me horribly for believing his stupid gluing wings to your ankles story. I still loved him enough to give him my Alpha Flight number one, which was, it was a really sweet and moving moment because he was so grateful. I mean, it was a little, you know, $2 comic, but we both love Alpha Flight enough that it was a good moment. So very cool. I love Alpha Flight. I would love to see it made into a movie. Seeing it done right. Marvel knows what they're doing. They'll put somebody good on it. 14 is one that we've already done. Oh, it must be time to be getting done. All right, 48. All right, we're going to close out from Mrs. Darks here. Mrs. Darks says, "Ha! Ha ha! Ha! What's your favorite way to mess with telemarketers?" Oh, I didn't even have to tell you that story. I could have just waited for this question. I have already answered that question. I don't like to mess with telemarketers. I don't like to piss them off. I don't want to ruin anybody's day because they're just people doing a job. Now, if it's scammers, I have no problem being rude to them. I don't like to mess with them. Because I don't like to, I don't want to drag it out, and I certainly don't want to get somebody, you know, angry with me that they may want to feel like they need to retaliate. But I will, if it's a scammer, I will just flat out tell them, look, what you're doing is illegal, and you're trying to steal my money, and I don't appreciate it, and you should be ashamed of yourself. Goodbye. But I won't actually mess with them. My wife did that, and she had the guy, swearing at her by the end of it and calling her all sorts of horrible names. It was funny, really, really funny. But no, I don't mess with them. I just politely get rid of them if it's a telemarketer, or I tell them they're a criminal and a bad person if they're a scammer. So, but that's about it. That's all I ever do to them. So there we go. We have reached the end of this podcast, and there's nothing left but to bring out GLaDOS and get a recap.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
"No way."
And then I was all, "We pretended we were going to murder you."
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. That's me. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is She Blinded Me With Science, as performed by William Shatner, and My Son the Astronaut by Oppenheimer. All of these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. And I do. I love them. If you want to get to, let's see. Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I added this in. That's right. I was going to say, if you want to get your very own handy dandy pocket mod, go to pocketmod.com. They are awesome. And when I say go to pocketmod.com, I'm not saying you're going to go buy anything. If you want to go get your own handy dandy pocket mod, you're going to go over there and you're going to get instructions for how to print them out and fold them. That's all it is. It's a piece of paper. You can do it in your sleep once you get some practice at it. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends. Seriously, if you enjoy this podcast, I am not kidding, go out and tell people about it. Share your experiences with them. Let them know how cool this is and bring them in. Have them enjoy it with me. Tell them to send me some Podomatics while they're at it. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page, Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com. I promise I will actually respond to you. Or you can find me on Twitter, where my Twitter handle is @nerdprideradio, or even check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest with you, you know this. Say it with me. The very best way to contact me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. sign up there, send me a message. We will hang out together on those boards. We will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Okay, welcome to Listener Betrayal. This is the section of the show where I've gone out to the forums, I let them know I'm recording, and now I get to read to you whatever they wrote while I was recording. And of course, you guys heard me put the thing up there. You know I was late. No one's had any time to do this. But that's okay, because last episode, when I recorded in the middle of the night, and I said, yeah, it's the middle of the night. I'm probably not going to get anybody, but maybe Lucy will be awake at all sorts of stupid hours of the morning. And as it turns out, she was, and she posted up just barely too late. So I'm going to go back, since there's nothing for this week, I'm going to go back to last week's. We'll just bring those back out. Lucy says, what comic books do you not own that you wish you did? What comic book or comic series has made the biggest impact on you as a reader? That is really hard to say, because there's so many influences from different directions. I don't really care about owning comics. I really don't. I just like reading them. I don't care if I own them. The collecting portion of them doesn't make any difference to me anymore. So, you know, what comic do I not own that I wish I did? I don't know, the most valuable one. That's really, give me the first appearance of Superman. I'll take that. But what has made the biggest impact on me as a reader? X-Men titles in general were the center of my comics world as I was growing up, and I loved those. Watchmen shook me up when I read it and showed me something different. It gave me, you know, meta commentary on the comic form, and it was just brilliantly done. So Watchmen was cool. The original Dark Knight series with 70-year-old Batman kicking ass out in the field. That was awesome. Dark Knight was, again, a rewriting what comics could be. It was really, really cool. But then for later stuff, look, I just finished the second compendium of Walking Dead comics. And Walking Dead is brilliant in comic form, just as I enjoy the TV show. I think I like the comics even better. They're really cool. Totally different animals, trust me. Similar stories, most of the same characters, but even the characters can have different qualities. The stories go in different ways while still having some same touchstones. They're two completely different animals, though. And I love the comic. And Scott Pilgrim. I love Scott Pilgrim. Really, really well done, that is. I don't know. I mean, look, there's a lot of comics I've read that I really, really like. And so I can't, hard to pick just one, but okay. Lucy's next comment is no, because that's where she realized that it was already closed. She posted up her question just as I was shutting the thing down, and then realized she missed out, because what did she miss it by? Yeah, she missed it by 1 minute. So she was typing as I was closing it. So sad. But she says, she says, check out the timestamps. Am I up here for my health? I'm making a dank PowerPoint for work. Also, while you're at it, explain my cat. He could use some justification, some demystification about now. He's a cat. He's a complete narcissist. He does whatever he does for himself. You're just going to have to deal with that. You are really secondary. I mean, you know, look, I know that there's food and you probably have something to do with it and appears mystically. And certainly someone changes that litter, I think. But honestly, I don't care. It's all about me. At least that's my experience with cats. I'm not revealing anything new. That is the stereotypical narcissistic cat. I don't know about yours. Let's see. Okay. Dun, dun, dun. All right. And then, it's just commentary on the next episode. I'm not going to get into that one. So you know what? That is the entirety of this episode. I had a great time. Thank you so much. Come back next week. Say goodnight, R2. And we're out.